Welcome back, everyone. This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our episodes are available on most streaming platforms. Just search for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. You can also check us out on our social media pages, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest episodes and up-to-date Chiefs news. So, all right, so this is the first episode that we actually have ever had a special guest on our show. So for right now, I'd like to welcome Trevor, our Jacksonville Jaguars expert. Welcome, sir, to the cast.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to be here and chop it up.
No problem. Yeah, we definitely wanted to, you know, kind of get a little bit of a, you know, as we play in different teams, get some, you know, kind of insight on the other team. So I thought this would probably be, you know, as much as we can get somebody else, you know, on our cast, kind of get a different view from the other side as well. So. Definitely glad for having you on today, and we'll definitely you know, chop it up with you today on different stuff. Definitely you know, Jaguars related too as well. All right, so heading into this week, which is obviously Week 10 for the Chiefs. Like I said, Chiefs and Jags play at noon at Arrowhead tomorrow, which actually is, like I said, the first noon game that the Chiefs have had this year so far to date, because all the games that we've had at home has been either pretty much either late afternoon games or like primetime games at night. So this is actually our first one, actually have a noon game into November. So it will be interesting. Definitely, I think it's supposed to be what, cold tomorrow too as well. But, you know, it'd be nice to have that Florida weather that Jacksonville has. But no, I think it's getting that Kansas City time for the colder weather. So, but yeah, we'll definitely start out with the numbers between the teams. So I'll send it over to you, Rich, for that.
Awesome. All right. Well, records wise, Chiefs enter this game at 6-2. Jacksonville is 3-6. Always a cool stat because I like to call out Andy Reid's tree as much as possible. But Jaguars are led by former Kansas City Chiefs staff member and Doug Peterson, right? Obviously went to Philly after the Chiefs, but is now in Jacksonville. So it's always a pretty cool little ceremony there pregame as they meet up and chat about their teams and probably what they'll do to hang out after, so on and so forth. Leading the way for the Jaguars, right? Of course, their star quarterback and Trevor Lawrence, right? Mr. Sunshine, as I call him from Remember the Titans. His numbers on the year are 198 completions, 308 attempts, a little bit over 2,000 yards, 11 touchdowns, and if I'm not mistaken, he has 6 interceptions. Feel free to jump in and correct me on that, Trevor. So, the receiver that leads the way for them is Christian Kirk, Mr. Big Money, 43 receptions, 574 yards, and 5 touchdowns. And another former Clemson Tiger leads the way for them on the ground as they shipped James Robinson to the Jets a few weeks ago. But Travis Etienne has 120 carries on the year, 680 yards, and 4 touchdowns. For the Chiefs, of course, we know who leads the way for them from a passing and pass-catching perspective. Mahomes is 219 of 331, a little bit over 2,600 yards, 21 touchdowns, and I always forget to pull up his interceptions readily, easy, but he has 6 interceptions on the year as well. Leading the way from a pass-catching perspective, because I can't say wide or receiving because technically he's a tight end, but Travis Kelce has 57 receptions, 659 yards, well on his way to another 1,000-yard season and 7 touchdowns. If I'm not mistaken, Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, Travis's touchdown last week was his first touchdown since the 4 touchdown game.
That sounds about right. You know, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, that was called out at the game, which was a little surprising because it feels like he scores 2 of the touchdowns every week.
Right.
And then on the ground, right, it's our mystery of who kind of leads away and what, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire still leads the way from a carries, yardage, and touchdown perspective. And then going into the team ranks, right, high level, I'll go over the Jaguars numbers real quick first. So points scored per game, the Jaguars are at 18th with a 22.1. Allowed per game is at 19.8, which is the 11th best. Yardage-wise, they are 17th in the league with about 220 yards per game, and on the ground, they're one of the best rushing attacks with 146, which is 7th best. Defensively, they give up 238 yards in the air, which is the 22nd best, and then on the ground, only 105, which is the 7th best in the NFL. And we know really what matters at the end of the day is how many points are scored. You can give up a ton of yards. So the defensive numbers are pretty good. Kansas City, we all know, right, they have the best scoring offense in the NFL with a little bit over 30 points per game. Defensively, they give up 23.6, which is the 20th worst or 20th best, however you want to say it. Passing yards per game, of course, you have the best quarterback in the NFL. You have the best or the most passing yards in the air, which is at 311. On the ground, which has been our kryptonite, right, is 103 yards per game on the ground, which is 23rd in the NFL. And then defensively for the Chiefs, they are 24th in pass defense from a yards perspective, and then 5th. So right there around with the Jaguars at 102 yards per game. So I think we all know, right, when we see the names, we've got, you know, the best offense in the NFL with Patrick Mahomes. And then surprisingly, Trevor, you know, I looked at these numbers and from a points perspective, I thought they would be much worse. But, yeah, being ranked in the teens and having one of the best defenses from a points perspective is a little bit surprising based on how much you send me your frustrations about them and how they play.
Yeah, and I sadly, I think those numbers are even weighed down a little. You know, their red zone efficiency is one of the worst in the league. They're able to move the ball down there but not punch it in. So
right.
They'll need to do that against the Chiefs if they want a chance.
For sure. So, Scott, what about from an injury perspective? What do we look like for both teams?
All right, so the injury report here for Week 10. For the Chiefs, obviously we will have the second straight game where Frank Clark is still have his – suspension, so he'll miss this game against Jacksonville, but we'll be back next week against the Chargers. As far as the injury front, as far as Mecole Hardman had an abdominal injury and did not practice all this week, so he's out for this game. I couldn't remember exactly if he got hurt last week. Do you remember that, Rich? Or like this injury seemed surprising to me. I wasn't sure if it felt the same way to you. I didn't know he was even hurt.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, like when I saw him. You know, when I saw the tweet that he was going to be out, I was completely surprised. So I wonder if it's more of I guess obviously your abdomen, you know, is every injury is an internal thing, right? Unless you have some skin issue, but yeah, right. Without a doubt. So I don't know if this is maybe just, you know, I don't know, an internal muscle issue or what it is, but I don't remember him getting popped hard enough to the point where he would have hurt his abdomen. Maybe it's I know he's a big bowling guy. So maybe
he hurt his abdomen while I was bowling.
Right. Injuries nowadays, right? There's some funny stories out there about some weird injuries. So who knows?
I mean, talk about weird injuries real quick. I mean, if you want to throw that out there, I mean, Salvador Perez for the Royals, Kansas City Royals, he got hurt, I forget, it was a couple of years ago when he was just helping someone move and he had to miss the first 6 or 8 weeks of the season or something like that. So yeah, I mean, the crazy injuries people do or has happened when they're not even playing the game does always happen too as well. So.
And I've got an even crazier one than that, right? So Rio Ferdinand, English center back, right, mostly known for his time at Manchester United. He supposedly pulled his groin or his hamstring or something like that, reaching for the remote from the couch that was on the table.
Wow.
And put him out a few weeks. So, you know, as a guy who is, you know, well into his 30s, I completely understand that, you know, Rio Ferdinand was a world-class athlete. So if he's getting hurt, you know, some of the injuries that I've had, I won't even talk about,
right.
You know, are much more understandable. Trevor, any crazy injuries or weird injuries that you've heard of in your times in sports?
None that come to mind, but it seems like baseball players, to Scott's point, seem to have the craziest injuries in my experience.
And it's probably the static nature of it, right? That they're, I mean, I understand they're world-class athletes, right? They still train just as probably as hard as anyone else does. But, you know, Nurp has to do something with the fact that Salvador probably moves more than any other baseball player on the field, right? With him being a catcher. But I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
Yeah. It is interesting that just some of those injuries that happens, you know, always be away from the game. But so, so Hardman was out, obviously, for this game. And Jerick McKinnon is the only other player that's listed questionable or on the injury report as far as for Sunday with a shoulder, knee, and hamstring injury. It looks like he practiced both Wednesday and Thursday, but just limited yesterday. So he is listed, like I said, as questionable. So we'll see. Wait and see if he ends up playing. We might activate Ronald Jones for the first time this year if he doesn't end up being able to play. But good news is we do get Jody Fortson back from that quad injury. He did fully practice this week, so he'll be back for the Chiefs. So big body target that we could probably use in the red zone if we need to, for sure. So for Jacksonville, they actually only have two guys on the injury report, which is interesting. That's a good sign of, obviously, at least at this point in the season. Evan Engram, tight end, has a back injury. It looks like he was limited in practice Wednesday and Thursday, but fully practiced yesterday. So he most likely will be good to go. And then also safety Rashad Jenkins had concussion. He did not practice on Wednesday, but was limited the last 2 days. So he is listed as questionable. So Jags looks like they're, for the most part, good to go for Sunday. All right, so now on to actually, Trevor, this is kind of your spot to shine, but I guess just give us your kind of overall view of the Jacksonville Jaguars, I guess, up to date this year so far.
Yeah, I think the key word that sticks out to me is young. They make a lot of inexperienced play. You know, they do so well during parts of the game, and then they just shoot themselves in the foot. And I think part of that's experience. I think part of that's having a new head coach. It's things they need to adjust on. You know, if you look at their schedule, guys, every loss this year has been by single digits, right? One score games. And it's kind of frustrating. You know, the season started out at Washington, and, you know, week one, I don't chalk that up to much. They played pretty bad, shot themselves in the foot, but hey, looked better than Jags of old. Then we go into Indianapolis, win 24-0, go to LA, win 38-10, and you're starting to think, wow, we might be something with the young talent. And then we hop up on Philadelphia, 14-0, with a chance to go up 21-0, and then turn the ball over five times and lose to the only other undefeated team in football. So, and then it kind of spiraled downhill from there, where it was just shooting yourself in the foot week after week. The Houston game, I think we had 450 yards. Someone can check me on that, to Houston's like 280, and we lost the game 13-6. I mean, you can't have 450 yards and score 6 points in the NFL. It's kind of ridiculous. And then we go to Indianapolis, and it's a game where we take the lead late in the fourth quarter, and we let them drive right down the field and score and win the game. The Giants, again, we have the lead in the fourth quarter. We let the Giants go down the field, score. The Giants win the game. Denver, shoot ourselves in the foot. I'm sure you guys – I don't know if you guys watched that game. It was on ESPN+, but the interception in the red zone that Trevor Lawrence threw. And so it's just this continuous, like, what are we doing? Last week, finally, it seems like we get a little bit back on track. They learn to win a close game finally. The Raiders jump up 17-0. I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my gosh, the season's going to go away. And I think if Urban Meyer was still the head coach, it would have, like, there was right. A little hope in the back of my head with Doug Peterson. And sure enough, we came right back. You know, we marched down the field. We scored better in the red zone. And we were able to finish a close game. Defense came up clutch when they needed to. So I think young and inexperienced and hopefully they can learn from this year. And in a non-competitive AFC South, maybe a shot to make a run, but we're going to have to win a couple of tough games like against Kansas City or a Baltimore. So I got
to ask real quick, what do you think is probably like the weakest part of the team right now as far as why it is that it comes down to these single-digit losses that, you know, they haven't seen overcome at least as of late?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. You know, to narrow it down to one thing, so I might do a cop-out and go to three things, but I think the inconsistency play of Trevor Lawrence. Some games, Trevor Lawrence looks like, okay, he's here. He's a top-five quarterback, and he's legit. And then other games you watch and you're like, what are you doing? And so you want to give him a long leash because of his first year. I don't even know if you can count his first year with Urban Meyer as the head coach. That wasn't even an NFL locker room. You had all the tension there. I think it's a miracle he came out on the other end and he looks halfway decent. So I'd say Trevor Lawrence's inconsistencies. I'd say another big thing for the Jags is penalties. I'm not sure where we rank on penalties per game in the league, but there's been a couple games this year we've had 12-plus penalties. You can't win in the NFL if you're shooting yourself in the foot like that. So I'd point to those two things, quarterback being obviously the most important, and then penalties you can't have in the NFL if you expect to win football games.
Yeah, I mean, and we know all way too much, right, about penalties, as the Chiefs have their games where they're just penalized nonstop. You know, we've called it an Andy Reid thing where team constantly shoots themselves in the foot, whether it's play calling or some of the situations we put our players in. And then when it's player related and it's just something that they're doing on the field, the indiscipline. So we are way too familiar with that now. Thankfully, we don't have to worry about the quarterback position, right? As, you know, from that first game, Patrick Mahomes went in against Denver there in his rookie year. He's been pretty darn good, you know, 99% of the time. So, you know, I know you and I, Trevor, right? We talked about Trevor Lawrence. I mentioned him being arguably the best quarterback prospect to come out of college since Andrew Luck. And like you said, right, sometimes, you know, in watching him, and he's a quarterback I follow because I like watching, you know, young rookie quarterbacks, or not, he's not a rookie anymore, right, but young quarterbacks to see how they'll project and if they're going to be up there with the tops, right, with the Mahomes, the Allens, the Lamars. And, yeah, to your point, I mean, that's everything what I have seen is sometimes Trevor looks like, you know, he's up there with the Justin Herberts and those guys that are just looking to solidify their current form with some big time wins, and then sometimes he looks like Derek Carr with Josh McDaniels as his offensive coordinator, right?
Well, hey, Derek Carr came off to a hot start against the Jags last
week. He sure did.
So I don't know if I can talk smack, but we did win and held him to 3 points in the second half. So
no, and you mentioned something that I looked up, right? So you mentioned the age of the team and you being young and experienced, and that I think that's one thing that a lot of folks in modern day sports, not just football, we don't understand that there's a process to progress, right, where you have a young team. So I looked up, the Jaguars are the fourth youngest team, and now this is by, like, weeks, right? And I know a lot of the age factored into these numbers are for, like, 70% of the roster, right, because, like, 70% of the roster are backups. But so the Jaguars are the fourth youngest team in the NFL, right? The Browns are somehow the youngest, followed by the Lions, which makes sense. The Cowboys are up there. And it's the Jags, the Giants, the Falcons, and the Chiefs are actually the seventh youngest team. Now, again, this is by days, probably even weeks. So they're all young, right? But it's pretty cool to see that, you know, from a Chiefs fan's perspective, arguably one of the top, three best teams in the NFL has a very, very young team. And so at least you've got the youth part right in your progress development and how you want to see them play out. So that's one thing that I was mentioning earlier, right, is that fan bases, owners especially, and front offices have to be more understanding of where they are, be realistic, and understand that, you know, there is a path to growth. Very few teams have done, let's say, things like the Chiefs, right, where they went from being division winners with Alex Smith to jumping that and getting better with a rookie quarterback, right? Most teams go through the growing pains like the Jaguars, right, where they go from rebuilding a team that once was in the AFC Championship to, you know, not being very good to having back-to-back, you know, number one overall picks. But then there are signs of growth. And like you said, right, they've lost all their games are by – all the games that they've lost this year, right, are by a minimum or maximum, of one score, right?
One score games, yeah. Yeah, that's correct. And I think that's part of the encouraging part maybe, but also the frustrating part is it seems like they're right there. Right. And so I'm excited, though, to see how they can – go the rest of the season since they finally won a close game this past weekend against Vegas. And maybe they're starting to learn. And, you know, you did see some of that progress. Instead of Trev trying to force balls, you saw him use his legs a little more to get first downs. Instead of Doug P going for it on every fourth down, sometimes we took the points. And it ended up in a win. So, you know, hopefully some of that continues to progress as we go through the year and we can pile up some more wins.
So moving into, let's say, I'm guessing Trevor Lawrence and let's say the players to watch, from a Chiefs fan perspective, who would you say is a player or two, three players to watch from an offensive perspective for the Jaguars?
If the Jags have any shot to win this game, it's going to be because Travis Etienne goes off. And since everyone was shocked, I think, at the James Robinson trade, and as I sat there and thought about it, you know, James Robinson was coming up. He was going to want paid at the end of the year. His contract was coming up because he was an undrafted free agent. And we had Etienne, who looked explosive but wasn't getting a lot of carries because they were split between him and James, and also Doug likes to throw the dang ball too much. But when James was traded and it became Etienne's job, guys, I'm not trying to exaggerate this, and this isn't just me being a homer. I think Travis Etienne is a top five back in the NFL, and I'm going to give you some reasons why. If you look at his stats, he's averaging – now, granted, he has not started every game either, so take this with a grain of salt. 5.7 yards per carry, but since he started – you know, the Jags versus Indy, 8.6 yards per carry. The Giants game, 8.14 yards per carry. The Denver game, against one of arguably the best defense in the NFL, 6.5 yards per carry. He's explosive, and he's good at what he does. Last week against Vegas, the yards per carry was down a little, but he also had some more red zone touches, so that probably messes with that stat slightly, but he had two touchdowns. The guy is just explosive. And so the Jags need to get it in Travis Etienne's hands. I'd say, you know, another guy on the offensive side of the ball to watch is Christian Kirk. You know, you talked about the big contract he got this offseason. And so far, you know, I think so it's been good. And he's Trev's number one go-to target. He's also a really good decoy because defenses know that. So we've had a lot of, you know, high low concept, you know, Kirk will go underneath and we're able to go a little bit deeper to someone else, or, you know, Kirk can be that decoy and we throw it to the fight. So we've been able to do things with that offense because of Christian Kirk. So those are the two guys I'd highlight on offense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I would have bet that you would have said Etienne just because without it, I mean, you and I talk about not only the fact that it was weird that they took a running back in the first round last year, right? But you could understand it based off the talent alone. I remember, you know, his freshman year at Clemson, how explosive he was, and, you know, being on that Clemson team and his whole time with Trevor. So the camaraderie that those two have is always good. Even though it is quarterback and running back, you would think that it's not that hard of a partnership. But, you know, knowing where this guy is, his ability, he's got great hands as a running back and in a West Coast-style offense, even though it is much more of a West Coast spread. I guess, like, similar to the Chiefs with Peterson play calling. Getting him in space and using his athleticism, his explosiveness, and his ability is without a doubt. I mean, and that's why one of the things I try to do in fantasy, I try to get Travis Etienne, like, as soon as they shipped Robinson, I was that was one of my running backs that I was trying to pick up because I was like, this guy's about to explode. So definitely understand that pick. Now, Scott, from your end, you know, what are your thoughts on the Chiefs defensively and how they manage Christian Kirk and Travis Etienne?
So real quick, I'm going to be right there with Trev on Travis Etienne. I think he is a top five running back for when he does, you know, have the type of games he had. And so far this year, like you said, he's what, fifth in the league in rushing right now with 680 yards. But I do definitely see like that explosiveness in him. That is actually one of the things that I pointed out for keys of the game for us this week on the defensive side is making sure that we stop him. It's even though he's not, you know, like Derrick Henry last week and he's not that big, bulky back, you know, that can just basically run over everybody. He's just got that talent that he can just kind of freeze people in motion and just, you know, make a good play. So, you know, kind of along the lines of like kind of like last week is stopping the run. You know, I think that starts with ETN as well this week for Jacksonville, you know, on that front. As far as on, you know, Christian Kirk, you know, obviously, you know, him being like that main, you know, wide receiver that they got for so far, we obviously with, you know, Marvin Jones and Zay Jones, but I mean, Kirk is that main guy. He kind of just makes sure you got to stop and, you know, make sure he doesn't get over the top, you know, on our safeties. But I think it kind of first starts with that running game. So obviously having Trevor Lawrence to throw the ball, against us, I think that will just help us in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, and the one thing I worry about is you mentioned Derrick Henry, right? Even Jonathan Taylor, we held him under 100 yards, even though we didn't hold Henry under 100 yards. The bigger backs, although they are very tough to stop, right? You don't have to worry about their explosiveness. Now, Derrick Henry's still fast. Jonathan Taylor's still fast. But, you know, they're in between the tackle runners. So you can gang tackle them a little bit better. Now, people like Travis Etienne, you get them in space and you get them in one-on-one situations. Travis Etienne can, without a doubt, juke a Justin Reed, a Juan Thornhill coming down in the box. Right? Definitely a Nick Bolt, a Willie Gay, you know, any of those guys, because he's just that explosive. So that's what I worry about, is Peterson getting him in one-on-one situations, favorable matches for the Jaguars, and our ability to tackle in space. Now, we have gotten younger and faster, but so this would be a good opportunity for them to show that and how well they move in matchup versus Travis Etienne.
I totally agree. So then, what do you think about Christian Kirk part?
So Kirk, I think it all depends on what happens with Etienne, right? If you take away Etienne, which I do see being difficult, then now you become more, now Trevor Lawrence, right, becomes more reliant on the wide receivers. And I think that'll be more favorable because we can then rush and we can blitz. And, you know, Trevor, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, with like any quarterback, you put pressure on them, they start struggling, right? But I know that's one big thing with Trevor is once you start putting him in difficult coverages and having to, you know, look past his first or second read really quick because he's worried about the pressure, that's probably where he struggled the most and made some of these bonehead decisions, right?
Well, I think for Trev, he's not terrible against the blitz, but to your point, whenever there's really good coverage and he has to go to that third read, that's where he struggles and makes mistakes. It's like his clock just it speeds up way too quick and he makes errors. So if the Chiefs can cover well and force Trevor to – because Trevor, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I believe I saw last week, he's one of the quickest in the NFL at getting the ball out of his hands. So he's saying, okay, I got this matchup. Here's my read. That guy's open. Bam. The ball's out of my hands, which I think is why the blitz has been ineffective against him this year. But when you make him hold the ball and sit in the pocket, that's when he gets a little more nervous and he starts making mistakes when he has to go to that third read. So if the Chiefs can cover well, and I don't know, you guys would know better, McDuffie, is he healthy? Is he looking good, et cetera? But if the Chiefs can cover well, I think that's how they're going to win this game. You know, you put seven in the box, you stop ETN, and you force Trevor to that third read.
Which will be interesting because, you know, I love the chess match that defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators go through, right? Chiefs are a heavy blitz team. They're reliant more on blitzing and creating pressure that way versus just front four pressure like a Buffalo Bills or anybody that usually plays Patrick Mahomes, right? So I wonder if – because you can't do everything. Well, for the most part, you can't do everything in the NFL. You can't completely shut down Travis Etienne as well as, you know, stifle Trevor Lawrence and the passing game. So it's, do you pick your poison? Do you say, okay, we're going to focus everything on stacking the box, taking Travis Etienne out the game, making Trevor Lawrence beat us in one-on-one situations, right, on the back end, and play more cover one, cover zero, so on and so forth? Or do you do the complete opposite and say, we're going to create organic pressure with just our front four, maybe blitz, you know, one extra linebacker or a nickelback every now and then. Then we're going to drop people in coverage to keep Travis Etienne in front of us, to keep Christian Kirk in front of us. But that just seems like it's not in Spagnuolo's nature, right, is to sit back and play, you know, cover four, or any of those max coverages where they keep everything in front of them. So it's going to be a good little chess match, and I love seeing those kind of things. And Andy Reid does have a favorable record versus all his assistants. So, you know, Doug Peterson has done really, really well. He's got, you know, he's matched Andy Reid in Super Bowl trophies. But, you know, maybe the master or the teacher at the end of the day does know the tendencies a little bit better than vice versa. So maybe he can share some of Doug Peterson's secrets to see Spagnuolo.
So, kind of on the flip side, what do you look for, Rich, as far as on our offense versus their defense?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, Trevor, you've talked to me all the time, right, about, let's say, your secondary and, let's say, the need for a more consistent play out of the secondary. So I think offensively, Juju Smith and whether it's Kadarius Toney, you know, getting more reps, whether it's, you know, Sky Moore, MVS, obviously not Mecole Hardman. I think Juju will have a big game because of the Jaguars secondary. Travis Kelce is Travis Kelce, right? So that'll be a good little matchup, you know, between him and Devin Lloyd and, you know, any of the coverages that they roll to him to make sure Travis isn't as effective as he normally is. But, you know, on the, if you were a betting man, Travis Kelce is going to get his. So for me, it's Juju Smith-Schuster. I can see him having a big game because of his ability versus, let's say, the Jaguar secondary in this case. Trevor, what does it look like, let's say, from a defensive perspective in that kind of a matchup?
Well, I'll give you a little sleeper for the Chiefs side. I think Tyson Campbell, the Jags' number one corner, and statistically this year has been one of the better corners in the league. I think he's going to shadow Juju. He shadowed Devontae last week when they weren't in zone. So whenever they did man coverage, Devontae obviously went off in that first quarter. I'm sure you guys saw that, but then had no catches the rest of the game as soon as they started solely putting Tyson Campbell on Devontae. Right. I think they're going to put Tyson on Juju. And then I think the opposite corner is going to have the problem. And I think it's going to be an MVS game. The Jags get beat deep all the time. And so who's that number one speed threat for the Chiefs? I'm guessing it's MVS now with Mecole Hardman out. I'd look, and it's the Mike Caldwell defense, right? It's that Buccaneers-style defense. And I go back to, you remember the Rams and Buccaneers in the playoffs a couple years ago, and the Rams win on that deep shot to Cooper Kupp. Mm-hmm. I've seen that now too many times with Mike Caldwell's defenses where he will play man and he will drop the safeties in or he'll leave guys out on an island. And that scares me opposite of Tyson Campbell. So whoever that speed threat is, and you guys would know that better than me, I'm guessing it's probably an MVS. That's what worries me as a Jags fan is we have got to help shade over the top, keep everything in front of us.
The only thing I can think of is unless, you know, obviously this is Kadarius Toney's second game with the Chiefs. I don't know how much Andy has planned up for him. Obviously, we look for probably him play a lot more time, you know, with Hardman out. You know, obviously Sky Moore too as well. But, you know, unless he has – because Toney's fast too, right? So unless he has some deep, you know, some deep throws for him lined up, you know, you also see him in that as well.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that I thought about. You know, as soon as Mecole went down, right, we talked to Scott about how it seems like a Kadarius Toney type game, right? If Juju is, let's say, taken out by Tyson Campbell or whatever the strategy is versus Juju, he's going to have opportunities in space, whether it's screens, slants, those quick routes to get the ball in his hand to show his explosiveness, or if he's taken in deep. Now, we know MVS, his game really isn't, you know, the screen plays, you know, the short take him deep. He is more of a long strider. So, you know, sounds like that might be the game plan, right? How do you use Toney to keep the coverage honest and short and then hit him over the top right with MVS? Now, from a defensive line perspective for the Jaguars or offensive line, Scott, what are your thoughts on Orlando Brown and this entire offensive line unit handling the likes of number one overall pick, Trayvon Walker, as well as Josh Allen? And some of the Jags defensive line.
Well, we talked about a little bit this, I think in our last episode, we were talking about offensive line and how, you know, every single game this year, we played a pretty good, talented defensive line. And I think what I mentioned was it's a little bit less talented. I'm not going to say it's, you know, not talented at all. I'd still say they're very, you know, talented, especially with Josh Allen, you know, on that front. Trevon Walker, like you mentioned too, as well. You know, they're on that defensive core as well. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this week. And obviously, you know, with Brown and Wiley, it's been like, who's been not the best, but who's been the worst of the two, you know, recently. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where Josh Allen lines up for. I'm assuming Josh Allen's probably going to line up against Wiley, but you know, I could be wrong with that. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I would think it'd be a little bit better this week. But I guess we'll kind of just have to wait and see. It's kind of really hard to predict. What are your thoughts on that, Rich?
Yeah, that's, I mean, and Trevor, you know, you'll be the one to educate us on where Walker and Allen and how often they line up, strong side, weak side, so on and so forth. But, you know, to your point, that's exactly the thought process we had of they've faced an absolute gauntlet of pass rushers. And even though, let's say, Walker and Allen aren't on the level yet of let's say even the defensive line that the Titans have last week, or you know, going to when they're facing the Chargers, you know, the Niners in some cases. Walker is probably going to be a top five defensive end within the next 5 years. Josh Allen is always tweeting between, is he really, really good or is he just good? So without a doubt, and those two guys are explosive. They're explosive as heck. And that's the one thing that not just Orlando Brown and Andrew Wiley struggle with, but every single tackle in the NFL, is you got one guy backing up who is like 6'6", backing up, you know, taking steps backwards, while you have another guy running full speed, bending parallel to the ground. So I'm with you, is it's going to be interesting to see that. How well do they handle the pass rush? And then I have no clue on, let's say, the interior defensive line pressure for the Jags, Trevor. So enlighten us on how you see the Jags defensive line pressuring the Chiefs offensive line and creating a havoc day for Patrick Mahomes.
Well, crazily enough, I think the two best pass rushers on the Jags are guys that haven't been mentioned. So we talk about Josh Allen. Josh generates a lot of pressure, but he can't always finish. Now, part of that is he gets double teamed more than probably anyone on the team. And so that's understandable because of his talent. Trevon Walker, he's such a freak of nature. If he could just learn some technical skills on how to rush the passer, I think the sky's the limit for him, but he's already really good in run defense. And he's got the bull rush move. So I don't know which tackle is weaker on the Chiefs as terms of strength goes. I'd expect them to put Trevon on that guy, and then maybe the slower guy they'll put Josh Allen over. But I think it's Arden Key and DeJuan Smoot. So these guys sub in on third and longs. And if you look at DeJuan Smoot's numbers, I think he's got 6 sacks this year, and he only plays on maybe a quarter of the downs, you know, or half of the plays. He just gets to the quarterback. He had 2 last week against the Raiders. Arden Key has been a really good signing for us. He creates really good pressure interior. So those guys on the pass rush side have actually been the best on the team so far this year. And so the goal then for the Jags would be, okay, get the Chiefs in a second and long or a third and long situation so we can get those guys on the field.
Well, and the interesting part there is, so if Allen is the, let's say if Walker's a stronger guy, right? I mean, Scott, you know, obviously feel free to speak up on your thoughts on Wiley, but sounds like Walker being the stronger guy, he'll go against Wiley, right? Yeah. He's the guy that's maybe not as strong as Orlando. Orlando is probably quicker than Wiley, but not quick enough to be dealing with, let's say, a Nick Bosa or, you know, any of the very fast pass rushers, right? So that's interesting. And then if you guys remember, Arden Key was actually someone the Chiefs were going after because of the exact things that Trevor mentioned. He's a great third-round pass rusher when that's the only function he's doing. He's super long. So he, you know, can get, you know, not only just get around with speed, but it's just lengthy, right? And can definitely get to the quarterback. So what would be interesting is on obvious passing downs, which, you know, I say obvious because in an Andy Reid offense, every down is a passing down, even fourth down. So Orlando Brown's going to earn his top 5 tackle money, right? And once again this week, if, you know, he's able to handle the pressure of Allen, stunts with Key, Smoot, and Walker, right?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, he'll definitely start earning it anyways. I mean, he's been kind of average play at this point for what he was asking for. But, yeah, I mean, it kind of starts, you know, going forward to see what he can kind of do. But this week, with it being a little bit less light than what he's been used to the first part of the year, I think this is where it kind of starts for him.
Yeah, I mean, and the good thing for us is our interior line is the best part of our line, right? So, Trevor, I don't know with their defensive line, do they run a lot of stunts or is it just literally, hey, you have a gap, you have an area, you rush that. What's the pressure scheme like?
When they're most successful, it's stunts. And so right. I hope they do more of it. You know, I don't think they do enough of it. So I'm hoping, you know, Mike Caldwell starting to say, okay, hey, we have a lot of success running stunts. We have a lot of athletic guys. If we can get them moving in different directions instead of one-on-one. And so a lot of stunts. I'd also like to see, and obviously 15, right, is the best quarterback in the NFL. That's without a question. I don't know, though, you guys would know better, is does he do better against the blitz or a little bit worse against the blitz? And the reason I mention that is the Jags also drafted Devin Lloyd in the first round, and I don't feel like we've utilized him enough in the pass rush. If you guys remember back to his days at Utah, he would rush the passer quite a bit, and he was successful at it. And so I'd like to see the Jags get him more involved. Now, maybe Mahomes isn't the quarterback you do that against, but just another thought to throw out there.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because most quarterbacks, you blitz them, they're in trouble, right? You go back to Peyton Manning, you look at even probably Josh Allen's numbers. But if I'm not mistaken, Mahomes is almost even better than just sitting in the pocket when he's blitzed, right? And we all know the famous sayings of Mahomes' magic. Once you blitz him, he's got that, you know, as Trevor, you sent me that hilarious meme where they say that Patrick Mahomes run like a guy that's trying not to spill his beer. And
it's true.
Those jukes that he does is when, I mean, they're, it's like, how did he just beat that guy? But he just gave him a little shoulder depth, took 2-3 steps back. And now he's firing in a pass like he's throwing the ball, you know, where he picked it up off first base and flung it to third base, right? So, yeah, Patrick's even better versus the blitz. So I think – and Tennessee, I guess, was successful when they did this. As long as they were able to rush and be disciplined within their lanes and keep Patrick in the pocket, they had a better chance. Like, Patrick is good in the pocket. Sorry, he's great in the pocket, but he's amazing when he beats the blitz – and then gets to playing, you know, backyard football and applies Mahomes' magic on you. So, you know, when – and, of course, right, we sound like Chief homers when we're talking about Mahomes, but the numbers are there to back up how great he is, whether it's in the pocket and being your typical pocket passer or as soon as he breaks containment and throws the ball. So, really, at the end of the day, it's when you apply pressure to Mahomes, Walker, Allen, Smoot, Key, if you're starting to bring Lloyd or even bring in some corners – they've got to get there. If they get in the backfield, they've got to get to Mahomes. If not, you know, it'll probably be a long day. And like you mentioned, they get beat a lot, you know, on deep balls. So that's what I could see a lot of this game being is Jaguars trying to create pressure, get to Mahomes, use your athletic, very athletic defensive line versus the Chiefs. Great interior, but maybe okay exterior line. And Mahomes – again, apply some Mahomes magic.
All right, so heading into for our, I guess you would say, game prediction scores, which, you know, like I said, we always try to get as close as possible, but never ends up being, you know, kind of correct. So actually, I'm going to give Trevor the start on this one. So what do you think as far as the final score of this game will end up being?
Well, I got to go with my heart, right? I got to pick the Jags. I can't go with what I legit think is going to happen. So I think the Jags will try to control the ground with Travis Etienne, and I think they will be successful at it, win or lose. I think Travis Etienne is really hard to stop, and I think they'll try to control the clock. And so I think the game might be a little more low scoring than a lot of games that the Chiefs play in. So with my heart pick, I'm going to go 24-23 Jags.
Whoa. My guy really is going with his heart.
That's a good score, though. I'm going to give it – I like that score, though.
So, Scott, since you like it so much, what are your thoughts on this? What are your thoughts on the score, not those?
Yeah, I know. Gosh, that score is pretty good, though. No, I mean, as far as inside the mid-20s. So, I went a little bit higher, at least for the Chiefs on that. I do think that it will be a relatively close game at first, but I think the Chiefs will have a better second half and they probably will have the first half like they seem to be doing as of late. But I have the Chiefs ultimately winning 30-17.
You know what's funny, Scott, as we talked about this earlier this week, you said, you know, we got to be careful because this could be another Colts game, right? So the Chiefs always struggle with the Colts, right? I think it's just their style of play. Similar to the Titans, they're a very physical team. Trevor, I don't know how physical the Jaguars are from a defensive perspective. I know they're fast and athletic. I don't know if they really, you know, instill fear. They're constantly just gang tackling, so on and so forth, right? But I think this is different than the Colts for several reasons. And historically, like I said, Reed does really well against his students. So I think, and I'm very different than both of you guys, I think it's going to be very, very one-sided. I think most of the Jaguar scores might come in late in the game when, you know, they're trying to just make the score look better than what it is. but I can see this being very, very lopsided. And I'm going to go with, I'm going to say 38, Chiefs 38. I'll say Jaguars 24, but I think it'll be a lot more distant than, let's say, a two touch or a two score game. I think the Chiefs will get out early. They'll make it, you know, to where they're more reliant on Trevor Lawrence in the passing game. And like I said, I could see it, I could even see it getting in the 40s for the Chiefs and the Jaguars being in the 20s.
Interesting. I mean, I will say, you know, obviously with, you know, lining up with the Jags as far as their losses this year being one possession. So I guess we're talking about this loss. If the Chiefs obviously do end up winning this game, it'd be more like probably two possession, at least, right? At least two possession game that they probably lose by.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing for me that stands out is what Trevor mentioned regarding, so you take away Juju, right? But you still got Kelce to deal with. And Devin Lloyd is an amazingly athletic linebacker. So let's say Lloyd is just on Kelce. Juju is covered by Tyson Campbell. You still got MVS. You still got Tony to deal with. You know how Reed is with his running backs at the backfield and catching passes. So that's what I see happening. And like Trevor has mentioned, with them being a young team, if they get behind early, now you start pushing things and you start getting out of your comfort zone and what you're successful at, which is getting into the ball in the run game, in the passing game. And Trevor Lawrence now starts to push things versus taking what's given to him or taking what the play call should be and not trying to do extra. So I think it's experienced and our high-end experience and consistently performing at a high level versus lots of talent, the inexperience, and I think they'll meet. Now, Scott, as you know, usually when I say things like this, it goes the complete opposite and it'll end up being 24-23, whoever wins the game, right?
Right. Yep. So yeah, I guess heading into our final thoughts segment for today. So basically this one's going to be focusing on the first ever game in Germany between the Seattle Seahawks and the Tampa Bay Bucks. Obviously, if you remember earlier this year, Chiefs fans thought that actually this would be the year that the Chiefs would actually be having a game, and most likely have been the Chiefs versus the Bucks, obviously with the Bucks home game. But, Tampa kind of declined and didn't want to use that game as their game there in Germany. So that's why it's actually Seattle and not Kansas City in Germany. So I guess question for you guys, obviously, and seeing Roger Goodell saying the other day, he says he expects to have at least four games in Germany through to 2025. I guess, what are your kind of thoughts, first of all, on first game in Germany, and second thoughts, like what is as far as the Chiefs' chances of being in Germany next year?
Trevor, so you being our resident international expert, since the Jaguars are over there or across the pond over you, what are your thoughts on the – I'd like to hear your thoughts on the Germany games.
No, I'm excited. I think it's a chance for the NFL to spread overseas even further. You know, the one thing that's plagued Jags fans the past couple – and me not being in Jacksonville, but, you know, I'm on Twitter and with all the people there. It's like, you know, we lose a home game when you're the home team over there. And so I think from looking at it from your guys' angle as the Chiefs fans, do you guys want to lose a home game, or you probably much rather it be an away game technically, right? So I think that's one thing to think about as these international games are scheduled is you got to remember these people are going to be losing a home game. The other thing is just the travel can be a drag. You know, it's you get your jet lag. Now, I know a lot of teams go over there a week in advance and they try to get, but it's a lot for teams. And so that's another thing to consider and why I think there will never be an international team. I guess you guys would agree with me on that, but
right.
It's just way too challenging logistically.
So the what I'd point out is, so obviously now with the 17 game schedule, each team has either, you know, they have nine home games or they have nine away games, right? They'll have eight games away or home. So this year, the Chiefs had the ninth game in Tampa, I believe was our ninth game. So obviously, I mean, you know, next year we'll have the extra home game. So would that really make a difference as far as using that ninth game to be a home game in Germany? You know, it probably would still make, You know, obviously a lot of Chiefs fans probably mad that we're using a home game for that. But if it being an extra one, I think it won't be that big of a deal, especially be, you know, kind of represent Germany for the first time there. And, you know, as of, I don't know if anybody saw seen this yesterday, I think Rich, you might have seen it. But obviously we're the number one merch provider there in Germany as far as, you know, what fan bases in the NFL, as far as what, you know, merchandise people are buying from is the Chiefs number one. So that's why it makes sense for the Chiefs next year. I think even New England's also lobbying for the game next year too, as well in Germany. So what about you, Rich? What are your thoughts on this international?
Yeah, I mean, now I think about it in a few different fronts, right? From a business perspective, for the NFL, the Chiefs, it's a no-brainer, right? You get more revenue. You might spend more money as you get out there, but you also get more revenue because it's revenue that you normally wouldn't get, right? Because when, you know, most Chiefs fans already have their gear, right? They bought it at one point, but now you're getting an influx of additional gear because people want to wear Chiefs gear. As you mentioned, we're number one in sales with Mahomes, I'm sure, is the leader there. And that's what happens when you have, let's say, the best quarterback in the league. So business perspective, it makes more sense. The exposure, you know, there may have been people that never really watched the NFL, and now they're like, oh, you know, who's at Allianz Arena? Who's at the Byron Stadium? Who's at Byron Stadium? Oh, it's the Chiefs. Who are the Chiefs? You know, and then now you just created a fan because they start watching Mahomes highlights, so on and so forth. So business aspect, that makes total sense. Now, the emotional side and being a fan, without a doubt, it sucks because you lose a home game potentially, right, if you're not the away team. But I'm for progress. I'm for the expansion of the game. Now, to Trevor's point, I agree 1,000,000,000%. There should never be a team outside of the United States that's housed locally in another country. The logistics around, like you mentioned, jet lag, and it would always be an advantage for the home team, right? If we had a team in London, even in Mexico City, which Mexico City is like playing in Texas, right? Because it's hot. The time zone is the same as Texas for the most part. I think Mexico is getting rid of the daylight saving time and all of that, right? So the time will always be the same. So you don't even have to worry about that aspect.
And also the elevation there in Mexico as well.
That's it's worse than Denver, right? For those of you that have been to Denver, is the elevation hits you hardcore in Mexico. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I like it. It's good as a once a season type thing for myself, right? Who is a soccer enthusiast. I can't wait for the Chiefs to be set up over there and play so that, you know, maybe unlike this year because the World Cup is going on. Maybe there is a Bayern Munich match I can go to before or after the Chiefs game, something like that. So, yeah, for me, I'm all for it. Gives me a reason to convince myself even of an even bigger reason to go, let's say, go to Europe, let's just say.
Right. So, quick question for Trev. So, obviously, you know, Jacksonville has had a lot of games there in London. Like I said, at least once a year. I can't recall, unless you know off the top of your head, is normally their record pretty good over there in London? Like, I wasn't exactly sure. I didn't have time to look it up to see if, as far as what the record is wise when they play over there.
Well, Scott, have you seen our record in general the past 10 years?
Yeah. That's true.
I actually do think historically in London have been some better games. I think back to Blake Bortles and the Jags. We beat the Bills over there. I think back to last year and that disaster it was. One of our wins was against Miami there. This year, obviously, was not a win. Lost to Denver there. But I think historically, for the Jags, I think their winning percentage is better than London than it probably has been the last 10 years. So
I was about to say the same. I was about to say the winning percentage is probably better in London than in Jacksonville. So that's why I figured, like, they probably play a lot better games there.
Yeah.
All right. So actually, that will conclude today's episode of the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. Thank you once again, Trevor, for joining us today. Definitely was a pleasure talking Jags football with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was fun.
All right, and so we'll be back with our recap of the Jags and Chiefs Week 10 matchup here, coming up here after the weekend. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to follow our podcast. Go Chiefs!